C+6. McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. In the hours after William Godfrey announced the GSC's first-ever unscheduled summit of leading scientists and government representatives from its primary member states, the world continued as though nothing extraordinary was going on. No one could bank on how long this calm would last, but the first full post-detection day had passed without any hints of public suspicion, and Godfrey had successfully made it through an announcement which Emma had identified as something of a banana skin. The announcement pleased rather than surprised Dan, who had received a heads-up from Timo via Godfrey himself. Dan, again via Timo, had also been kept in the loop on matters relating to the continued observation of the approaching comet Conte-Abate. This semi-officially designated name was already falling by the wayside, however, as Alessandro Bonucci's Il Diavolo name spread from the Cavalieri Observatory and quickly came into common usage among those in the know. Some of the new observational data shared with Dan came from Timo's various ground-based observatories, but he was more interested in that which came from the GSC's orbital telescopes of the kind Timo had long wished to emulate and exceed with his proposed orbital observation platform. Dan knew that the infamous 1908 blast at Tunguska, the force of which had flattened trees across an area of some 2,000 square kilometers, was widely believed to have been caused by an incoming meteor no larger than 200 meters in diameter. He also knew that the dinosaurs were widely believed to have been wiped out by an asteroid with a diameter of around 10,000 meters. While awaiting a firm size estimate from the GSC, Dan had prepared himself for news that Il Diavolo's size would likely fall closer to the dinosaur killer end of the spectrum than the tree flattening end. What he hadn't prepared himself for was the revelation of just how close to dinosaur killing proportions Il Diavolo would be. What he hadn't prepared himself for was word from the GSC that its length was on the wrong side of 8 kilometers.
At least when they make the movie of this, they can't quite say the usual thing that it's the size of Manhattan.
Clark had quipped in an effort to lighten the mood, but in truth, Dan's mood hadn't shifted greatly despite the shock of the GSC's size estimate. To Dan, it was like the difference between being stabbed in the heart with a 4-inch blade and being stabbed in the heart with a 6-inch blade. Either way, he'd be dead if the knife got in. What mattered was parrying it away before it got too close. With the energy of the impact sure to be heightened by the fact that the comet was approaching at a significantly greater speed than the average asteroid, it wasn't a case of choosing the strongest adjective among the likes of catastrophic and cataclysmic to describe the level of destruction. If Il Diavolo wasn't stopped or at least diverted off course, its impact with Earth would spell destruction that was nothing but total. The other troubling update, which again changed little in a tangible sense, was that the GSC's initially calculated impact probability of 99.2% had been increased to 99.7%. Alessandro's essentially 100% comment, which Emma in particular had quietly hoped to be a frightened exaggeration, was now supported by independent deep space observation. Alessandro's 90,000-year estimate of the comet's orbital period was also well within a reasonable margin of the GSC's estimate of 95,000. The description of Il Diavolo's orbit as highly eccentric was a brief source of hope for Emma, Clark, and Terra, until Dan and Timo clarified that in an orbital context, the word eccentricity had nothing to do with erraticism or changeability, but rather related to how much an orbit deviated from being perfectly circular. The data was sound and the conclusions were clear. Il Diavolo was gargantuan and it was going to hit, hard and fast. Aside from the new data, the main news of the afternoon was that Alessandro Bonucci himself would be among the Fiori Frontieri delegation in Buenos Aires. He was the only name Dan recognized on a list of 6, which was mainly composed of staff from Timo's small planetary defense team regularly stationed in South Africa, to whom Alessandro had sent his initial observational data before anyone else. In a broader and more general sense, Godfrey's definitive announcement of an imminent summit also removed some of the helplessness-induced anxiety among Dan's group. The only sensible course of action at this point was keeping quiet about everything while the summit took place. While this didn't do much to assuage their acute and natural fears about the colossal comet heading their way, The fact that an external one-week timescale was now in place did go some way towards reframing the problem as one which could potentially be addressed in a manageable and linear manner. This was certainly true for Dan, though he may have overestimated the difference it made to the rest of his inner circle. Outside of the Birchwood bubble, Saturday's anti-GSC protests in various cities failed to build on previous turnouts as the announcement of a meaningful summit took the wind out of the protests' sails in the eyes of many. Godfrey's concession to allow Timo to send a delegation, meanwhile, had convinced many others that the GSC was ready and willing to change on the back of its recent negative publicity. The issue of the Kerguelen memo wasn't one which would go away on its own, but no one in a position of informed authority was any longer paying attention to it. As far as they were concerned, it was, if anything, a useful distraction from the real issue. The afternoon and evening news cycles were dominated by discussions of the upcoming GSC summit, and particularly the game-changing invitation that had been extended to a Fiori Frontieri delegation. Some other exceedingly wealthy individuals who half-heartedly harbored space-related ambitions queued up to bemoan what they saw as a double standard in the fact that one private enterprise was welcome in Buenos Aires, but others weren't. The scale of Timo's historic investments in the space sector and the sheer amount of money he was willing to throw at planetary defense didn't seem to register with these individuals as relevant variables, and news networks across the world were frustrated by a day-long failure to reach Timo himself for comment. Timo had spent much of the day with Dan while conversing with the chosen members of his delegation as they began their journeys to Buenos Aires. None of them knew what the coming week would bring, but all were leading experts in their hyper-specialized disciplines, and many politically neutral senior figures at the GSC were delighted to have them on board. It would have been a gross exaggeration and an inaccurate statement to say that anyone had truly relaxed when the summit was announced, but there was at least no longer an all-pervading sense of aimlessness about the comet-stopping endeavor. An invitation to appear on the next night's GSC-centric episode of Focus 2020 was swiftly and soundly kicked into touch by both Emma and Dan when the call came, with neither having the slightest desire to participate. A little while later, with Clark and Timo next door and with Tara having retired to bed, Dan and Emma sat together on the couch watching mindless TV in an effort to forget the world for a few hours. They were doing fairly well at this until he went into the kitchen to fetch a drink and suddenly asked if she had eaten anything all day. She hadn't, and she didn't lie. Responding naturally, Dan then asked if she was feeling okay. She wasn't, and she didn't lie. Although he didn't have to ask what was wrong, the fact that Dan wasn't used to there being anything wrong with Emma left him racking his brains for a response. He had seen her angry more than a few times and sometimes scared for a few quickly passing moments, but never deeply troubled like this. "We're going to make it through this," he said back on the couch. "Think about all of the smart people at the old national space agencies that are under the GSC banner. I don't mean the Godfreys and the other politicians. I mean the scientists. I mean the astronomers and the military tech kind of guys. They're all on the same side with the budget of all the money in the world. We're going to make it through this." When Emma looked up from the floor to meet Dan's gaze, there was a slow-moving tear in her eye. "I just don't understand why they would do this to us," she said, her voice a shadow of its usual forceful self. "Why would they warn us about a problem we can't solve instead of just solving it? Who does that?" "It's way too early to say we can't solve it. The summit hasn't even started yet." "And why did this have to happen now?" she went on, paying little attention to Dan's attempt to lift her spirits. "Right when we're finally, you know, when things are finally so good between us." Dan watched as Emma's hand briefly covered her eyes, and as a multitude of new and faster-moving tears appeared when she lowered it again. "I don't want to see you like this," he said. "So don't, I'm not asking you to look at me." Dan hesitated, trying to choose his words more carefully. "That's not what I meant. I don't want you to be like this. No, wait, that's not what I meant either. I don't want you to feel like this." "Feel like what? This, upset, scared, angry, whatever this is. Feelings like that aren't going to help us. They're not useful." "I'm not a robot, Dan. I can't sit down and decide what I'm going to feel based on which feelings are going to be useful. This is me reacting to a giant comet coming towards Earth too fast for us to stop it," she said, her tone growing acerbic. "Okay? So I guess what you've learned tonight is that I don't react to this particular situation in a very helpful way. Oh, and this is also me reacting to us being abandoned by a bunch of asshole aliens I used to think were on our side. Sorry if that's not useful enough for you.
Dan slowly rose to his feet.
Emma, we're not doing this. I'm not angry at you, she replied, sighing out the words in a softer but still deflated tone.
I know. I'm not angry at you either.
Emma shifted in her seat, moving more upright. Are you angry at them?
Get your coat, Dan replied, an indirect yes.
We're going to the cornfield.